what you're underwriting is life and disability products. And so therefore, there is a real risk that part of the disability that somebody's going to have is going to have an element of loss of capacity. And there's lots of critical illnesses and life-threatening illnesses where there will be a loss of capacity, multiple sclerosis, motor neuron disease, cancer, and sometimes it's permanent, sometimes it's temporary. And I think they are very much like insurance policies and legal services. People hate buying them. We don't, we don't get up on a Sunday morning, Saturday morning, and think, what I'll do today, well, I'll go and buy some legal services. But I have seen a lot of people, and I'm talking a lot, over hundreds of people who haven't got powers of attorney in place, and it's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. Conversely, we help people and have seen people with lasting powers of attorney in place, and what they say is it's an absolute godsend, because of the issues that, that have been alluded to. And it's, in the cold light of day when people are putting these documents in place, I always say to them, these are for my healthy clients. Once they're registered, you can put them away. I always suggest, with regard to a health and welfare LPA, get it registered with the GP as a matter of protection, just in case you have a minor blip. So you could have like a urinary tract infection or pneumonia, and you want your loved one to phone the doctors. So, they'll go off and do that. But unless somebody is affected by the serious illness, there's no need for the LPA for health and welfare to be thrown left, right, and centre. But certainly for property and finance, I would certainly be registering it with the bank that's used on a daily basis. People have got lots of products. They all don't need to know about the LPA unless until such time as, somebody is affected by a life-threatening illness.
Thanks, Meg. I mean, just to give a bit more background to people on the case that Meg referred to, it was something. There are a number of insurance companies where there are Facebook groups where their customers talk about their experiences working with those insurers, and unfortunately, they're not always positive experiences. On this particular one, I came across somebody. I came across the lady who posted very in a very distressed manner that the husband had this terrible heart attack. And the problem is that, her first question was, does the company pay out on critical illness insurances? And I'm pleased to report that they have actually already agreed the claim in under 2 weeks. So that's the industry doing what it should do. The challenge, however, is that the insurer have a diff because the policy was just in the husband's name. The insurer have a problem taking instructions from the wife because there isn't an LPA. Fortunately, Meg is intervening and helping in that one, but that's just so you understand. That's not, I don't work as an advisor, as you all know, but occasionally, if people have problems with claims, I like to try and get in and help. In a minute, Paul, I'm going to ask you to talk more about the regulatory consequences for advisors if they haven't, if an LPA isn't in place. And I think you've got a couple of examples of the Ombudsman awarding against advisors, but I am going to come to some of the comments in the chat. Simon Thomas had a particular question for you, Paul, but Meg, I'm happy if you'd like to answer. Apparently, Judge Denzel Lush even has written a huge tome on LPAs, but would himself choose a deputyship order? Is there more oversight of these than LPAs? Would you still go through the LPA route for most people?
So the answer to that is definitely yes, and there's reasons for that. Most people will appoint somebody that they trust implicitly when they're putting LPAs in place. Somebody made a comment, quite rightly, that some solicitors are charging £750 for each party, and that's a lot of money. We, through my private practice, for example, we would do £400 for two lasting powers of attorney. You can do them yourself online through the government website, which somebody's alluded to as well, but you have to have them perfect, because if not, they'll get sent back. But once they're in place, they're effective. Where the judge is coming from is the protection afforded to somebody with a lasting power of attorney in place. They don't have the same monitoring as a deputyship order. So we have come across situations where the person setting up the lasting power of attorney isn't actually the donor, it's somebody else on their behalf, and they're defrauding the donor, and there's no checks or very little checks that can be undertaken once the LPA has been registered, unless somebody else sees a fraud in place and they can report it to the Office of Public Guardian. And sadly, that does happen. But where the judge is coming from is when somebody's lost capacity, so you have to completely have lost capacity, you can apply for what's called a deputyship order. Solicitors will charge in the region of £2,000 plus for a deputyship order. LPAs normally take, at the moment, they're taking up to about 4 months to get registered. A deputyship order can take up to a year. You can do it yourself, and a lot of people do it yourself, but it's a lot more cumbersome than lasting powers of attorney. You have to get a medical report that can cost in the region of £400 to £1,000, because you need a doctor to certify that the person doesn't have capacity. And it may be that they have capacity for some issues, not others, which complicates things a little bit more. Potential legal fees. Then you've got the registration fee, which I think is about £375. Then there's a bond, which is £100. And that's to protect the vulnerable person, so that if somebody does defraud the vulnerable person, there's an insurance policy in place. However, with a deputyship order, and this is where the judge is coming from, the deputies have to do accounts every year, and they're scrutinised by the Court of Protection. So this is where, you know, the vulnerable person is really protected. We don't have that with lasting powers of attorney, unless the donor stipulates as a condition of the lasting power of attorney that there must be accounts provided on an annual basis to maybe third parties. So, and you know, the case we were talking about with Ian, we might sadly have to go down the route of a deputyship order, but they are more protective for vulnerable people. But you can only apply for a deputyship order if that person has lost capacity. And again, there are two types of deputyship order. You've got property and finance, and you've got health and welfare. But it's very rare that the Court of Protection will grant an order for health and welfare. I hope that helps.
It does. Can I, Paul, can I ask you to pick up and go through, and Maggie may want to add to this afterwards, but particularly when we talk about how people can be locked out of accounts. I mean, an example that was cited to me not so long ago was, if you have a couple and there's no LPAs in place, and they've got a mortgage offer that comes out, and only one party has capacity, they can't accept the change in the mortgage offer. Similarly, if we look at a wealth case, how somebody might be locked out of actually acting on any advice the advisor might be given or might be giving on the actual investment strategy or a wide range of other issues. If you could talk to that, Paul, that would be most helpful.
Yeah. In terms of investments, the courts have, it's now been accepted by the OPG that you don't need to make special arrangements for discretionary investment. So you can leave that blank in the instructions, which you never, that was always in doubt if you in past LPA law, but they've said that they will accept that discretionary management now is taken as given once somebody loses capacity and you've got a financial affairs LPA in place. This is all about really protecting the client, but not really protecting the client, because what banks are more concerned about is that the abuse of a client, which Meg sort of referred to there. The problem is that not all attorneys are villains, and yet some are, as she's alluded to. And so the bank is running a very difficult course. They have to work out whether that person is being benefited by the attorney or the deputy. And as Meg said, the deputy has many more many more responsibilities, and the court will impose restrictions and produce accounts. But the attorneys, they don't. And so the question is, well, what are the attorneys' duties? And they are to use the wealth of that particular donor for the benefit of that donor, not for themselves or other third parties. And so particularly that becomes a difficult issue when there's been gifting. And the question is, can the attorney use the assets for gift for themselves or gift to other third parties in relationship with the donor? And the banks have to run that course. And so you can find that that is a very difficult course to run for them. And so I have some sympathy with them with that. But when it's a job's worth sort of rejection of, no, I can't help you, then that's a problem. And if it's a joint account, then clearly there's a problem with that, because the person is entitled to 50% of that joint account legally. Again, that is a problem, and they do freeze accounts when they come across these issues. Yeah, but that's a practical problem when the LPA or other documents are trying to be used.
Thank you. Jeff Shave, you've just raised a question in the chat. Would you like to ask Paul and Meg to comment on it?
Yes, please. I would.
Go ahead, Jeff.
So essentially, living with my partner, we've been together for over 40 years, but not married. She has had a long-term illness for over 30 years. I have had a severe illness over the last 4 or 5 years. So everything currently is in joint names, the house, the bank accounts, not the car. And we've been talking about LPAs for a while yet, but obviously I need to organise getting her out of the house to do that. But just in terms of the finances side of things, because everything is in joint names, do I need to do a separate LPA for that side, or can I just go down the health and welfare route at the moment?
Jeff, you would need you'd need two LPAs. You'd need one for yourself and one for your wife. You can't have a joint lasting power of attorney, even though it's a joint bank account. That's the first thing. But I would suggest you get them in place. I don't know how much you have in your accounts. It's not my business. It's obviously not one for the forum, but maybe you might want to consider severing the accounts. But it's difficult to give further advice on that without knowing a bit more.
We're probably not really in a position
to
give individual advice, but I'm sure if you care to approach Meg or Paul subsequently, you can have a conversation with Juliet Akibia. Apologies if I got that name wrong, but Juliet, would you like to ask a question? Then I'm going to come to Karen Taylor, if I may. But Juliet, you just raised your hand. Okay, maybe that's going down. Let me come to Karen. You've raised your hand. Please ask your question. But you're on mute right now. No?
Is that better?
That's better. Gotcha.
Perfect. Sorry, I couldn't find the mute button.
No problem.
So this is a question for sort of younger clients, and I'll base it on my daughter and our husband. So they haven't got powers of attorney in place, and we've been talking about it lately. I haven't, and I need to put one in place for them. For younger people, if they put them in place, because I do believe that this is a societal problem, and actually we need to get better educated and have younger couples who are financially intertwined even before marriage or without marriage to actually do something about the potential of what happens if they get run down by a bus and they're not able to think for themselves or speak or communicate or anything. Can someone change their mind, though, if they're young, if they put their lasting power of attorney in place, as long as they're still mentally able to do that, can they change their mind and withdraw that at some point in the future? There's obviously a problem with wills, and often the second party to a joint policy or the beneficiary having to give permission to change the trustee.
Yeah, no, lasting powers of attorney, provided you have capacity, you can revoke the lasting power of attorney. It's quite a simple document. It's a deed of revocation. You send it back to the last, sorry, to the Office of Public Guardian, and they will cancel the lasting power of attorney. And then you can, you can start again.
Okay, so that is fairly simple for younger people things change. Yeah. People you expect that are going to be decent turn out to not be so decent.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, and we've got Pooja Chandaria has raised your hand. Pooja, please ask your question.
Hi, everyone. I've got two questions, if I may. Paul, you mentioned that there was a third type of power attorney. I just wondered if you could just briefly touch on this third type. And my second question is, and please, Meg and Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that power of attorneys and wills, it's not a regulated space, and I'm led to believe that because I have all sorts of people trying to contact me on LinkedIn that state that they are will writers and they want me to sort of pass on business to them. So as a financial advisor, I'd love to understand where do we start with our due diligence to be able to refer clients to the best possible people in this space. I know there's sort of some debt qualifications involved potentially for trusts work, and then I think is it the SRA that's listed as our regulated by, but yeah, just some insight on how do we find the best of the best. Thank you.
Paul, do you want to go first?
Happy to. That's a really difficult question. In this space, in law, we talk about things that are reserved activities, and anybody can call themselves a lawyer and not practice reserved activities and not break the law. And will writing is unreserved. There are associations of will writers, and they're governed by societies. Mm-hmm. But there's some questions about the level of training that people get. Mm-hmm. Some of the allied practices within that are to set up trusts, and that is setting up a property trust is a reserved activity if it's a standalone trust.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can write a will with a property protection trust, which is an unregulated activity until you come to transfer that property into the trust, because that is a reserved activity. So it's quite a complex set of questions that come out of that. There are good will writers, and there are probably people who are not so good, like probably the same in regulated practices. If you've all come across McClure's, you'll find that there's a huge issue about the way McClure's have done things in the past 15 or so years. And they've all dropped off the register, and you can't, they're no longer on the roll of solicitors in Scotland or England. And so there's nothing that can really be done by the regulators about what's happened there. It's really difficult. The best practice, I would say, and I'm not being protectionist here, but I think step lawyers are a very good move. Somebody who's qualified in step, that is a gold standard award. However, most high street solicitors have got good practices in this area, but it is difficult. And lasting powers of attorney can look very simple, but when you start to complicate things like business LPAs, then you do get a level of complexity that you probably need somebody with legal training to understand, so they don't create conflicts and they don't create ambiguity amongst the documents that you're setting up. But that's a personal opinion. That's not, and I'm sure Meg's got a personal opinion.
Do you want to add to that? And then I'm going to come, to Hazel, who's raised her hand. And Paul, while Meg's asking, could you just read the question that Dave's just dropped in the chat for you?
Yeah.
And then I am also going to ask you, it's important we get to the subject of how the Ombudsman looks at this issue, or the lack of LPAs and the consequences for advisors. Meg first, please, then Hazel, if I may.
Okay. So I think with regard to recommending well, writing companies or anybody else, your clients, obviously it's a decision for yourselves. But sadly, through my private practice, we are on the receiving end of some of the people who've gone to the likes of McClure's or will writing companies because they haven't been regulated. And not only are they not regulated, they don't have professional indemnity insurance. They're not necessarily legally qualified. And quite often, if you look at the small print, they'll say legal advisor or legal assistant. And what they're very good at doing is drafting a very simple will for the client, but suggesting to the client that they then put their property in trust to avoid care home fees. And so they hook the client by doing it that way. The client then spends about £6,000, £3,000 each by severing the joint tenancy and having two trusts. And they then put their names on the actual trust documentation as well. And so there's an awful lot of clients out there at the moment. It's been in the news quite a lot. Quite a lot of building societies have wrongly referred or been in relationships with these will writing companies, and clients are owed millions of pounds that haven't been recorded properly within their own financial structures. So I think just be very, very careful about who you're recommending your clients to for will writing services. And as somebody's alluded to, STEP's very good. But a solicitor is regulated by the Law Society and will have professional indemnity insurance. So if they do cock it up, at least you do have a right of redress. You also mentioned the third type of power of attorney, and that's a document called a general power of attorney. Now, that is the same as a lasting power of attorney, but it's effective only while somebody's got capacity. And they're very useful if you want something put in place for a short-term solution. So, for example, if you were going on holiday, you might appoint your children as your attorneys to sign any documents whilst you're away, and that would be quite specific. And then the power of attorney would cease once that instruction has finished. They're effective immediately, obviously, unlike general powers of attorney, sorry, lasting powers of attorney, which can take up to 4 months. But when you lose capacity, the GPA is automatically revoked. The problem with that is if a bank has got the general power of attorney, when do they know, or are they going to ever know that the donor has actually lost capacity? So that's one of the downsides. And that there's no, that they are legal documents, they're a one-page document, and anybody could set them up. So there is a lot of risk and exposure to a donor putting one of those in place. So if you have a client who does need one, you know, just make sure they get the best advice, because they're fantastic documents to have, you know, if you need a short-term solution.